The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America. 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Hi, welcome. I don't know if I can get through the rest of the show after that story.
What's that?
About the judge wanting to, you know, he'd really want to ban kitchen knives.
Yeah.
There really is no need to have a 6-inch or 8-inch kitchen knife. You don't really need one.
You shouldn't be slicing things anyway. It's dangerous.
And so I suggest that people take their kitchen knives to a modification center.
Modification center.
To modify your knives and your brains.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. All right. Other stories out there. And there are a ton of them out there. The number of Americans qualified for military service is dropping. Defense Secretary James Mattis warned late Wednesday, citing drug abuse, obesity, and a lack of morals as key reasons why nearly three-quarters of young people that apply for the military cannot meet the minimum requirements. We are no longer receiving people from society who are as much in step with the qualities that our institution must have for success on the battlefield, Mr. Mattis told reporters Wednesday following his address to Air Force graduates in Colorado Spring. Our military for years has struggled with a declining pool from which to pull its recruits. But Mr. Mattis made clear the problem is worse. More than 70% of 18 to 24-year-old males and females cannot qualify to be a private in the Army. I'm told it's exactly 72%, and it's going up. This is a combination of illicit drug abuse, illicit drug use. Obesity is probably the biggest one. Morals, you know, just arrests, that sort of things. There are other reasons, he added, academic failings as another major factor. There are roughly 34 million Americans between the ages of 17 and 24. Of those, 24 million are ineligible to serve, according to a recent report from the Conservative Heritage Foundation. This is an alarming situation that threatens the country's fundamental national security, the February study said, quoting military recruitment leaders. Like Mr. Mattis, suggesting the situation is getting worse. At the same time, Mr. Mattis said the military will not close its doors to people who have made mistakes. We don't want to get to the point where we're refusing anyone with the chance to get back on their feet. Well, then who are the people you aren't letting in?
Right.
I mean, are you saying that if you ask somebody coming in, have you ever smoked pot? And they said, yes, but I don't anymore. They can't get in? Or they can get in? What would that be? They don't answer it here. That's just a question that I would have.
Well, you know, the standards have changed over the years, not just in the military, but also with police recruiting and everything else, trying to get people to essentially do the job, find enough people to do the job. Different municipalities accepting new recruits for their police academies, they've changed the standards. And over the years, the military has changed the standards on a number of levels. But I don't know how far you go. You know, I don't know, you know, I mean, what about the fitness standards? You know? But going back to Mike Rowe, if you've got to do the work. Now, I think people who sign up for the military know what they're signing up for, know that they're going to go to, you know, basic training or boot camp. Mm-hmm. They know they're going to go through that. But I just wonder if a lot of that is keeping people from signing up. Well, I don't want to have to exercise or do anything.
I don't want to become a soldier.
Yeah, right.
I
I don't want to do what it takes. Right?
But who are these? If I mean, if 72% can't fulfill the minimum requirements, I'd like to know specifically. I mean, I'd like to see 1,000 of these and why they were refused. What, you know, the applications.
Right.
I'm not going to be able to see them. They'd be tougher to get than finding out what the last administration did.
Yeah.
Sorry, you can't find out about any FISA applications or applications of anybody to join the Army.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be interesting to see specifically what it is. Are they looking at body mass, you know, BMIs and saying, sorry, you can't get in because you're 20 pounds too heavy?
Mm.
When you say obesity, are you saying that it's people are morbidly obese? They're mildly obese. They've got 30 extra pounds, 20 extra pounds. I would just guess, I mean, if I was going to join the military at 18 or 19 years of age, if that's when I wanted to do it, I would probably know that if I was overweight, they weren't going to accept me. I probably would not even apply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes even a recruiter will say, hey, here's what you need to do to get geared up for, you know, enlisting. You know, maybe go out, maybe train for a few months, maybe you go on a diet, maybe, you know, see what you can do, because here are the standards. A recruiter's trying to hit their numbers in any given office.
Right.
You know, that's the point. And certainly it would be a positive if a young person goes out, gets in better shape, because that would tell you something, even if they were to, before they enlisted, that would tell you something about the individual if they were able to accomplish that in a fairly short period. But it depends on, again, that, as you mentioned, level of unfitness where they are.
Most probably, and his name just escaped me for a moment, Lone Survivor. I just can't. Marcus Luttrell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, most people who went into go into the military probably didn't plan to do it as he did.
Right.
I mean, he knew it in his younger years. That's what he wished to do. And he trained and was in shape knowing what he was going to have to go through. I mean, that was a goal of his. I doubt that's the average 18-year-old.
Right. Yeah, and then on to be a Navy SEAL.
Right.
Skewed down to very few numbers, which is the point. Which, by the way, it should be. I mean, it should be the elite that are getting in, not just for the Navy SEALs, but, I mean, it should be the elite that's going to battle, the most fit that are going to battle. The question is, are we getting to a point where it's harder and harder to find someone who's fit?
I just don't know for example, the drug standards here.
Right.
Because that would be my first question. If somebody comes in and you test them and they've got marijuana in their blood, I can see you saying, okay, sorry, you can. Now, does that permanently? Or can you come back? They say, look, straighten out your life, come back in 3 months.
Right.
Or is it harder drugs? Are there more people applying that are involved in harder drugs than pot?
Mm-hmm.
That are keeping them out? If you say you've smoked pot, I don't know if that keeps you out or not. But we take a blood test. There's no pot in your system, which means you haven't smoked it in 30 days. You know, roughly, isn't that what it sort of is? It's like a 30-day thing.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's what I believe it is 30 days. And so at that point, you know, fine, you haven't done it in 30 days, but you've smoked it before. When was the last time? 6 months ago. But I'd rather do this with my life. Do they accept you in that case? I mean, what is it when they say drug abuse that is keeping people out?
Well, right now, the first thing that comes to mind is opioids. You know, that's kind of the talk of the really the center of the conversation. And I'm wondering if it's that kind of, you know, addiction or problem. Because if you test for something that is highly addictive, then that's going to be something that I think could probably disqualify you for a long time, if not permanently. You know? And if you're testing positive for it at that moment, at the point of enlistment,
right,
then
right, that, yes,
you've, you know, that recruiter, the standard should be, because you can't put them in basic training with an addiction like that. That's something they're not going to be able to battle you know, while they're getting prepared, while they're supposed to be getting fit for service.
Mm-hmm.
So I you know, I don't know.
You're not a detox.
Don't know center. Where. No, you're not. And it can't be your detox program. We can't have it serve as that. So other drugs that may not be as bad in terms of addiction, they might review something like that. I don't know. I don't know where the standards are.
It just would be interesting. I'd like to see the number and the drugs involved and the obesity standards. I mean, how overweight are, you know, are these people? And, you know, and I'm sure they've looked at them, and even pictures, not to make fun of the people, just to look at the applicants that are joining. And, you know, are you getting a significant number of applicants where you say, what are you even doing here?
Mm-hmm.
You can't be in the military. I can tell right now you're 50 pounds overweight. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you said obesity is one of the major problems. Was it 15 pounds?
Right. I would imagine it's above that. That it's to the extent that someone wouldn't be able to, in a healthy way, lose that weight in a fair amount of time, and also perform and meet the standards daily, the fitness standards throughout that process, that basic training, boot camp. Because if you're not fit now, well, you're basically, it also can't be your fitness training program. While the point is to get physically and mentally fit and to learn all of that you need to learn to go into service, it's not about hiring, it's not about getting paid and having that gunny be your personal trainer. It doesn't work that way.
Basic training isn't personal training?
It is not.
Okay, it's not CrossFit? Okay.
No.
All right, 866-90-RED-EYE.
In 2017, 41.4% of road check violations were a result of issues related to vehicle brake systems. Not only is it important to keep your brake system in tip-top shape to avoid being placed out of service, it's necessary in order to keep your vehicle running at optimal performance. Here is a tip to keep your brake system in the best shape possible. Drain your air tanks daily. Brake system air tanks, while often overlooked, are a crucial part of proper maintenance. Pay attention to the amount of water and contaminants that escape. Too much moisture in the tanks is not good and can indicate that the air dryer is not functioning properly. The next CVSA International Road Check is June 5th through the 7th, so be sure to get inspected today.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Red Eye Radio, he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Let's go to Luke in Fountain, Colorado, about the military finding it hard to recruit people. Hi, Luke, you're on Red Eye Radio. Hi.
Yeah, the main problem we got with the kids nowadays is they're hyper. They're not made to go out and play like we used to do. I don't know how old you two are, but I'm 65. I'll be 65 shortly. And when I went in, you know, all of us was basically fit. We went out, we played, we done everything else. We're not sitting behind controls or whatever, playing games on the idiot box.
Yeah, you know something though. I'm out and about a lot, and was playing basketball yesterday. I was the oldest person on the court. A lot of young people out there, you know, playing basketball. They look pretty physically fit to me. I'm sure there are many out there that aren't, but you know, again, obesity is, you know, part of the problem, as they the stated. But you know, like I said, I'd love to see the figures. Ralph in Manassas, Virginia. Ralph, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome. Hi.
Good morning, guys. How you doing? I'm going to make a quick comment. I'm retired now in my 50s, but I also heard the gentleman just before me. I wrestled in school. I was, you know, somewhat fit, and I'm from the South, and you know, running around all day. But that's gone. Those days are gone with me. Anyway, I think Future Wars articles I've read are going to be robotics. Anyway, in fact, Russia and China now are they have robotics out in the field, and we also are a little bit behind those two countries. But we're going to deploy one day. I probably won't see it, and you gentlemen, I don't know what your age are. You may not either, but most big future wars are going to be fought by robots, and then that's going to just, as far as the basic training standards.
Okay, but that's not today.
We're talking about the demand today.
We're talking about the demand today, not the demand 50 years from now, the demand today.
It's not 50 years, sir. It's coming. It's very soon.
Well, fine, but it's not today. That's the point. It's not the problem they're facing today. It may be the problem in the future. We're talking about what Mattis is talking about today.
Okay. Goodbye. Have a good day. Thank you.
Okay.
And, you know, it is a statement on society. If the number one thing is obesity, to the extent that that recruiter believes that that person is not going to make it through basic training, if that's becoming, and I would love to see the stats ultimately on how that has differed over each, I guess, 15, 20 year period, each generation as we go through. How many people or how many recruits were unfit from the beginning and couldn't get in? And I would love to see how those numbers have changed over the years.
Right.
But if we're at a point right now, and this is what matters, because there's no telling. There's always a threat, and we have to be prepared for that threat. And frankly, with all due respect to the last caller, as of today, you still win wars with boots on the ground.
Right. That was my point. You're trying to talk about what may be 10 years or 50 years. I'm not going to get in that debate whether it's 10 years or 50 years. We're talking about Mattis and what he's looking for today.
We get to that point, then fine. But we're not there. And we're at a point then at what? Here's my other question. I mean, how many people, in terms of signing up for the military, where's that drive coming for the generations behind us? You know, we think about Mike Rowe and him talking about jobs that are labor intensive and you have to have a work ethic. Well, the work ethic is just the beginning for somebody who is who wants to serve, and most of them know that. They know full well it's going to take everything that you have. Potentially, it could take all that you've got throughout your service.
Right.
And you have to be dedicated. You obviously have to be loyal. Because if not, then on the battlefield, that can get you or others killed.
Just because the last two callers asked the question, I'm a young 31. Eric is 87.
88. Just turned 88 over the weekend. Yes. Right. I just, you know, again, you have to wonder how many are willing to do that and how many believe they can just sign up for the military, you know, and, you know, it can solve, like I said, it can be whatever, you know, it's not supposed to be the cure for something. And look, I certainly admire anybody who's willing to change their life to go on to that next level, and they're willing to go to a recruiter and look to serve. But I wonder how many of them were truly disappointed enough to change that about themselves, whatever stopped them from getting it, whatever prevented them from getting it.
That's a great question.
Were they able to go back and change that about themselves if they weren't permanently disqualified?
That's a great point.
And that will tell you if they're determined to serve.
anytime, 24 hours a day. Say, Alexa, play Red Eye Radio, and we thank you.
And he's Eric Carley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So do you say, and we thank you, or just Alexa, play Red Eye Radio? Do you have to say, and we thank you, too, as Deep Voice Guy said there?
Yeah, no. Brian's saying no.
No, okay, all right.
Do you have to say Alexa?
Yes.
What if you say Alicia?
No.
That's from an SNL bit.
Yes. All right, let's go back to you. We go to Sean in Virginia, former naval recruiter, about the story we read earlier where the defense secretary said 72% of the people that applied to get into the military aren't acceptable, don't meet the basic minimum requirements. Hi, Sean. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to be on with you. I listen to you every morning, the first time I've called in.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, one of the things I haven't heard you touch on but was a big issue when I was recruiting in the early 2000s was the legal drug issue, where kids had been treated for either ADHD or anxiety or something like that, fairly routine mental health type questions. But if you have been treated for any type of mental health issue like that, it'll prevent you from enlisting. So that was a really big one. Or you had to prove that you'd been off of it for so many years before they would look at you.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now, was it the treatment or the underlying issue that was the concern?
Well, the main thing, honestly, what I saw was it appeared to be the medication. Was that if you had been medicated for any reason, that was really the disqualifying factor. And, you know, one of the worst cases I've heard was two daughters of a service member who sought treatment for anxiety because their dad was, you know, on his second tour in Afghanistan. And when they went to, you know, follow the family tradition and enlist, they were prevented from enlisting.
Wow.
Because they'd done the right thing and sought, you know, good help and counseling from, of course, military doctors at the time. And it prevented them. So,
wow.
It's been, I think it's one of those things where many, you know, we're told that's the right thing to do. And it's funny because in my mind, it comes back around to the PTSD issue and veteran suicide.
Right.
That we're also taught at the same time, seek help, yet that help will prevent your further service.
Yeah.
So you're caught in this catch-22 where it's like almost impossible to do the right thing.
Mm, wow.
What about
and
if...
Go ahead. No.
Oh, I was going to say, what if somebody is 15 pounds overweight? I mean, is there a weight limit? Is there a BMI standard? Because they said that was one of the major things.
There absolutely is. And usually if somebody wanted to get in with them, we'd work with that, put them on a home health program, get them on a diet, get them exercising regularly. I know all my recruiters wound up doing, you know, terrible term. We'd call it, you know, fat camp, where they'd come in and exercise with the other recruits and with the guys either waiting or, you know, who want to go in. And often that would help people with that issue. You know, there's other medical things. Like I had a guy who just wanted to come in, but his eyes were out of standard. And at the time, of course, you know, the Navy wasn't hiring, but the Army was taking just about anybody in 2005-06 timeframe. And I kept saying, look, go to the Army. You've got all the qualifications. You've got all the skills. And his thing was, I didn't want to do that. I want to be in the Navy. I said, but the Navy won't waive your eye issue.
Okay.
So, so
obesity, if you come in and you're, let's say you're 15, 20 pounds overweight, if they sat there and you said, look, you know, you qualify except you're too heavy, but look, we can work with you. And if you show that type of, you know, initiative, then that's a good thing. That helps you. That's viewed as a positive. Did you have success that way?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, are they willing to do it and can they drop the weight? Because there still is a minimum number. You have to meet that weight standard before you go in. You can't just get a waiver and say, okay, we'll let you go.
Do they do it with, is it the BMI that they use?
Not specifically. I know in the Navy we have a standard height-weight scale. And you have to, and I mean, it comes out to something like a BMI, but it's, okay. in my mind, a little more arbitrary. Of course, I've been in 30 years and, you know, and technically overweight. But once they tape me, they say, oh, yeah, it's mostly muscle, although it's getting less of that now. But so, I could still max out on the PRT, you know. So,
right. So John Candy in stripes would not happen today.
Never.
That's the fact, Jack.
Well, one more question.
Absolutely right.
When it comes to pot is much more accepted in our society than it used to be. What is it when it comes down to pot? If somebody comes in, what's the question that you would ask them on that or any type of illegal drug?
Well, usually with the illegal drugs, it comes down to, is it a lifestyle? Did you try it once and say, okay, I can do without it? Or are you, you know, addicted and have to have it and think? Because it also comes down to, in the mind of the military, a moral issue. Are you somebody who's going to be constantly breaking the rules? We don't want to deal with people who just don't have the discipline, the self-discipline, to be able to play by the rules and stay within the guidelines. And, you know, you see it all the time, though, with military discipline issues right now, that, you know, they're taking those folks, that they're making those compromises, and then you wind up with a lot of other problems down the road just because people weren't really mentally where they needed to be to put up with the discipline of being in the military.
Is it different? Is it more difficult recruiting today than it has been in the past for you?
Well,
you're former, though.
That's hard for me to say because just because I never recruited in the past, you know. I was recruiting in the like I said, early 2000s, mid 2000s, really. And
for how long?
And for about 5 years.
Oh, okay.
And so, and of course Navy. So like I said, we didn't have the desperate need of people like, you know, the Marines and Army did. So at that time, it was almost a luxurious thing to be a recruiter because I felt like I was turning more people away than I was able to take in. But, you know, just because of the standards and just the needs of the service. Now, that's changing as we shoot towards the 600-ship Navy. So we're all of a sudden saying, whoa, we need to keep more people.
And of course, those changed. It probably was different for you probably after 9/11 as well. A lot more people wanted to serve, right? I'm guessing?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, you had a lot of people who wanted to serve, and so, like I said, it became more selective.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for your service, and thank you so much for giving us the call.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
You answered some questions that I don't think anybody else but a former recruiter could answer for us.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that... I mean, because you look at the dynamic of I guess where we are as a nation in terms of war or service. But a lot of the recruiting is built on things that happen, you know, like a 9/11, or it's family tradition. You know, as you mentioned with the two girls, it can be a number of things that drive people. But if you've got neither of those two, I mean, you know, let's hope we don't have another 9/11 ever. And you just have, and you don't have any family tradition of military service. You know, how big is that call for people in general to serve? And what is the mindset? You know, we're not the same nation we were back in 2000. We're not the same nation we were 10 years ago. In 2008. So, you know, a lot changes. I remember the night that they announced that Osama bin Laden had been killed. You know, there was a lot of, you know, there was this euphoria. You know, people were happy that the serpent's head had finally been taken.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, is that, you know, is the war on terror, is the existence of an enemy who is ever growing, a mindset that will always put us in danger, that is ever growing and ever present.
Well,
is that enough to drive people to enlist?
A danger that, and this is a great point, how the media also covers it too. And we talk about the fact that the media is not covering Donald Trump's successes, but then again, they weren't really covering what was going on, to a level that we would be satisfied with, where the public was. For example, the way that we covered the Vietnam was covered every single night it was on. Every single night it was on. And when it comes to the war on terror, are we covering it the way that we would cover other wars? No, we're not. And so that is something that helps sets, I think, the psyches and the mental outlook of people throughout the nation, including those that may want to join. So, yeah, I think that's a great point.
Thank you, Sean. We greatly appreciate it.
Yes, we do. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Well, a couple of more news items out there. Democrat Representative Keith Ellison, second in command of the DNC, the Democratic Party, that is, called for a boycott of the National Football League over a rule change prohibiting players from kneeling in protest during America's national anthem.
Yeah. By the way, NFL, we told you.
After the controversy marred the 2017-2018 season due to protesting players, the league now is requiring players to either stand for the anthem or remain in the locker room until the anthem is over. The new policy means teams will have to pay a fine if players kneel or sit on the field during the anthem. Ellison, deputy chair of the Democratic National Committee, called for the boycott of the NFL in a tweet on Sunday. Friends who know me know that I love football, but I won't be watching the NFL this season because of the unfair, cowardly, and idiotic kneeling ban.
All right.
Meanwhile, Hall of Famer Eric Dickerson defended the league's new anthem policy as a good thing because it gives players a choice between standing on the sidelines during the national anthem and staying in the locker room. This gives you a choice. I think that's a good thing, Dickerson told TMZ Sports. TMZ has a sports department?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah,
see, that's the most shocking part of this story for mm-hmm. me. That's something I
TMZ weather? TMZ shopping?
Is it TMZ weather really hyped up?
Yeah, it's overly hyped.
DMC told TMZ Sports in an interview posted Sunday, if the guys want to stand, they can stand. If the guys that want to stay in the locker room, I think they'll stay in the locker room. I mean, when I was there, we stood. And just like religion and raising your kids, the NFL can't possibly please everybody. You can't please everybody, Dickerson said. By saying this, you know somebody's not going to like it. It is what it is. It's like religion and raising your kids. Nobody's going to agree with you all the time. Speaking for himself, the former NFL running back told TMZ that he would stand if given the choice. Everybody has a disagreement on how to raise your kids, religion, politics, so my thing is that I stood when we played and I would still stand. Everyone has a right to do what they want to do. You actually don't. If you want to stand, stand. If you want to stay in the locker room, stay in the locker room. They are grown men. Well, not necessarily. It is the NFL. Some are.
Some still have some growing up to do.
And then over the weekend, I mean, you know, social media, 25% of the players. Sources say 25% of the players might boycott the entire season.
Okay.
Yeah, really? Go without the pay for the entire year?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So 2018-2019 gone. After the 2019-2020 season, isn't that when they have to redo the contract again?
Yeah, it's right about that time. Yeah,
2021. I mean,
right.
You know, as you lean into there. So
yeah.
25%. Yeah, go for it.
Sure.
Go for it.
No.
Go for it.
We think you should walk out now.
Stand your ground.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Go outside and then protest outside.
Yes.
And all your buddies who are still playing will drive off in their luxury cars to their luxury homes. And you can go back to your apartment and have a sandwich.
I did, but the one I liked on Friday was where they said some players are saying that they're going to stay in the locker room.
Okay.
Well, yeah, that's
one of their choices.
That's not a protest, then. That's one of the.
I know what I'll do. I'll do one of the options that the NFL gives us. I'll show the NFL.
That's what I thought too. Well,
okay.
Wait a minute.
All right. Yeah. Way to go.
How bold you are.
Yeah. Like the people walking out of the Vice President Pence commencement speech. All right. Those students. I'll show him. I'll walk out of my college graduation. That'll show him.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. In the news, all right, we have to start out with this because it really teaches a very, very, very important lesson.
Yeah,
and this is the softball game that happened Friday.
Okay,
in Fresno, California, Fresno State apparently, and it was the high school softball championship game between Clovis High School and Buchanan High School.
All right.
After the players were introduced, both teams turned toward the flag to prepare for the singing of the national anthem. The announcer said there will be no anthem play ball.
All right.
Now, the reason is that they only played at the beginning of the session for all the games, not before every game. Didn't matter. The fans didn't like it. So the fans booed, and the fans started singing themselves.
Very nice.
Very, very, very nice. Good job. And the lesson we learned here is not everybody in California wishes to secede from the motherland.
Right. If they want to secede, they're going to have to go through that softball field and its fans.
Secession goes through Fresno State.
The slow pitch folks are going to have something to say about secession.
Whoa, let's stop with this fastballing here, this fast tracking. A little bit of slow pitching here with seceding talk. So.
Or maybe it was fast pitch softball. Could be.
Could be. It could be. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. All right, that blows.
It wouldn't be if
okay,
I were
that
pitching.
Blows that whole reference.
Yeah, right.
We'll just shut up and move on.
Yeah.
Well, it was great. Now, it also shows you. Because there were a ton of people in the stands. Everybody, you saw everybody standing up. Nobody told anybody to do anything.
Nope.
In fact, when they were told it wasn't going to play, they wanted to stand up and do it. Was that a political statement that they were making? Because that's what we get. The Star Spangled Banner is a political statement.
No.
When you have, remember, this is California.
Right.
And when you have this many people in the stands, and I would have, I'm going to guess there were anywhere between 1,000 and 2,000 people in the stands. Looks like a little minor league. It looks like a college ballpark, which probably would fit maybe 2,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the stands go up and the sidelines probably looks like they may have like you know, 30, 35 rows, so going all the way up in the, you know, behind the backstop.
Right.
So I'm going to guess maybe 1,500, 2,000 people it would hold.
Now, it could have been...
1,500 to 2,000.
Right. It could have been politically motivated, as we just found out a little while ago. The two teams that were playing that day on the field were the Make America Great Agains versus the Hopes and Changes.
No, it was not.
Are you sure?
I guess my point is that, you know, we're told by the left that it's political, yet you're talking about one of the biggest leftist states that is pushing through a more leftist agenda than I believe any state is right now.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the state where the national anthem controversy started, the genesis came not far from Fresno.
Right. Yep.
And here are these people all together, ticked, not, you know, just, I don't know if they were ticked off, but they said, well, that's not good enough. We are going to sing the Star Spangled Banner on our own. And everybody, nobody was in charge. That was the group think at that moment, which is the entire point that we've always said. Even in liberal California, when you truly get down to it, when people are really honest, when they're in their own element, the Star Spangled Banner is not political.
No, it's not.
Now, this got a lot of play on the internet. Did ESPN play it and have commentary afterwards?
You know, it's funny because I was wondering, I was actually thinking the same thing, not ESPN, but, you know, because we were talking softball, I was thinking, what about hardball with Chris Matthews? Would he lead with something like that? Probably not.
Well, we'll see. I think they most probably had off last night. Let's see if they play it, because you know, again, it was greatness, and the enthusiasm at the end, the cheer at the end. You know, probably a lot of you got goosebumps, because I know I did.
Yeah, this was what was it, Friday night?
Friday night, right?
You know, going into Memorial Day weekend, couldn't the organizers just say, "Look, I know we don't normally do this before every game, but it is Memorial Day weekend. Maybe we change that rule, especially this weekend."
Yes.
You know,
they have made a change in policy. The national anthem's played before every game from now on.
And anyone can use the bathroom. Oh, speaking of which, attention Starbucks employees.
Oh.
Your training is today.
Your training's today.
What if you call in sick? What if you actually are sick? What if you're a company? Because you know that's not everyone. I'm just saying, it's quite possible someone is sick today.
Now, what if you work the early morning shift? You still have to, like,
oh yeah,
like,
no,
what we
yeah.
do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you gotta be there.
You gotta be there?
Yeah, oh, yeah, you gotta be there.
This is like us having to mandate we have to be at a 2 o'clock in the afternoon meeting.
Gotta be there. Yep, you get the hours on the clock, but you gotta be there. You gotta stay. You gotta stay for the meeting. The training.
Yeah, but with a lot of the companies I paid for, they wouldn't pay you to stay. You'd just be told you've got to.
Well, if it's
there.
Mandatory, I think in most states, they have to pay you if it's a mandatory training.
Unless you're on salary.
Yeah, I don't know many baristas that would be on salary.
No, I meant that's why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, in my past, I never got paid.
Right. You never got paid extra.
Yeah, right.
But exactly. It's part of the job. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Some of the meetings weren't part of my job. They made them part of my job after. It didn't appear anywhere in my job description.
Company policy didn't appear anywhere in the job description.
Company policy for meetings.
That's
about
not my job.
There was nowhere in the job description of the book where it said company meetings for dumb things.
Stupid company
stupid
policies.
Things are required.
Yeah. Right.
Even though
you require them to get that specific.
Even though, remember the year I was sort of pressured to go to the Halloween party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That wasn't me. That was like, no.
Yeah.
Somebody from the on-air staff has to show up. Gary, will you show up? You live closest.
Yeah. They asked me. I kept saying no.
Now, I didn't dress up. I just showed up.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody really cared.
No. You know. They generally don't.
But the boss did. Mm-hmm. Come on. Nobody ever shows up for these, nobody ever shows up for these stupid things.
Yeah. Are you going to be their boss? No.
Well, it was covered all over the place. Look at this. Wall Street Journal. Starbucks opens its bathrooms. Now it needs to keep them clean and drug-free. And they talk about the problems Starbucks in many areas have had with, you know, drug users putting their needles, leaving their needles in the bathrooms of Starbucks.
Right.
And they said,
hazard.
Look, this is going to be a problem.
That's a hazard. That's a real problem. That's a real health hazard. So now you're dealing with regulations, local regulations, and possibly state regulations when it comes to hazards in your bathroom created by people that otherwise wouldn't be there if you could enforce a policy. But you can't do that because you've been shamed out of doing that. That's the world we live in. And expect that they'll come back and they'll change their policy. They'll probably not issue a statement about it next time. That would be my advice.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Shh. Be very, very quiet.
Right. Like the NFL. They'll likely adjust their policy. And the next move would be what? All teams will come out onto the field after the national anthem.
That I'm reading here. Experts, Starbucks training a first step in confronting bias.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. How is forced mandatory training confronting bias in any way? You're pretending like you're doing something, but if someone has any kind of, just assuming the worst, if any of your employees actually are racist, you think a 3-hour training program or 2-hour training program, whatever it is going to change their hearts? Give me a break. No, they're doing this for publicity, which is why they publicized it.
And the CBS News article is Starbucks losing its mojo. Yes.
Is a mojo a drink?
They get a large mojo.
A venti mojo, please. Yeah.
They talk about the problems outside of this, but I looked at this and said, well, yeah, but they've also got this big imagery problem right now. They said, certainly if we don't see improvement in the U.S. numbers, they're talking about sales numbers in Starbucks over the next couple of quarters, I think it is a reasonable possibility that they would be a tempting target for an activist investor. Now, we don't mean activist in the terms of being politically activist.
No.
They said we think that's a reasonable possibility, said an analyst with Morningstar, who expects the coffee chain to lose a few hundred locations in the U.S. over the next 18 to 24 months. The leash on CEO Kevin Johnson is getting shorter by the day. Starbucks did not respond for a request for comment. But they say Starbucks sales, especially weak during the afternoon hours, even though coffee consumption during that time period is on the rise, according to coffee analysts. Man, I didn't even know there was a job like that.
Yeah.
In a recent presentation.
Former radio people.
in a recent presentation to clients, the coffee analyst noted that growth in the company's My Starbucks Reward program and gift card purchases have slowed. Profits for newly opened locations have also fallen. And you and I have said, I mean, this was sort of a duh for us, you know, due to the fact we've been in Starbucks before, that there's not a big seating area in so many Starbucks.
Mm.
And you're going to have the problem of the non-company stores, which there are a ton of them.
Mm-hmm.
What are there? Are there 8,000 company stores and, 14,800, I believe there are, overall stores? Well, that's 6,000. Well, what's the rule in one Starbucks is not the rule in the next Starbucks, because one is a, you know, licensed to, for example, in the Target that I go into, there's a Starbucks right there. That's not a Starbucks store.
Not a company store.
Not a company store, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a Starbucks license. But as far as I know, they won't be doing the training today.
Mm-hmm.
So you have different rules and regulations for different stores. And that's never good.
Well, because in that case, whoever is the proprietor, you know, Target, that's what their policy is going to be. Whatever their policy is going to be is what will reign in that location. You know, whether it's a grocery store or a big box store like Target. But, you know, there's the other side of it. Because most of their customers are transient. I mean, they come in, they get their drink, they go. Or they hit the drive-thru and they go. And that's great, but you've got to promote the menu. I mean, you've got to get out and promote what your menu is. As we head into summer months, we're getting late summer type temperatures in our neck of the woods, already in the 100 range, and it's going to be there for, according to the long-term forecast, you know, for days at least. But we're well in now to summer weather in many locales. You promote the cold drinks. You promote something, you know, that maybe is more of a regional drink. You promote something, again, that is on the menu. You start promoting agenda. People want to come in. They want to get a drink. When you start taking a position, you're asking your customers, by carrying your brand in their hand into their office, to take that position, because someone's going to ask, oh, do you support them on this? Do you support them on that? You're projecting your stance onto your customers.
Your politics onto your customer, correct.
And not everyone wants to carry that brand as a result.
And probably not a good business model.
I would say promote the coffee, promote the drinks, and you'll be better off.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We food shoppers have had 2 years in a row of falling average grocery store food prices, but that string could snap this year.
We're expecting to pay 0.5% to 1.5% more overall in 2018 than we did in 2017.
Agriculture Department food price economist Anne-Marie Coons. Now, yes, we are seeing farm level and wholesale prices for many commodities falling, some of them down below a year ago, and Coons says,
this does trickle through to the retail level, but there are many other factors that come into play to that price we're paying at the grocery store.
And this year, the big factor,
the costs associated with transportation in general, whether it's because of the increase in oil prices or increases in trucking rates, have become more expensive in 2018.
This week, prices for diesel fuel, for example, are almost 30% higher than this time a year ago. So right now, at least, Coons sees only 4 food categories that even have a chance of selling for less than in 2017. That's pork, fats, and oils. That includes salad dressings and butter, processed fruits and vegetables, and non-alcoholic beverages. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio, he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, what we went through this weekend, which was, he's lying. It's not a spy. It's an informant. It's a human source. It's not a spy, though. And we had to go through all of that and for no reason at all, and we'll try to go to you know, sort of weave our way through that one with a good audio cut where basically I think everything's put to rest. Mark Meadows from the Republican from the Freedom Caucus, spoke on Face the Nation.
Right.
Said, look, here it is. So we'll get to that coming up here in a little bit. So what do you think? Are we going to have a summit?
The president tweeting like he never wrote the letter announcing officially that the summit was off over the weekend.
I was really kind of almost
praising North Korea. Just talking really in a positive way about what kind of economic potential there is, which, by the way, I don't know that I've heard anyone else make those comments. I mean, maybe Larry Kudlow made that comment to him behind closed doors in an attempt to convince the president, look, if you just appease Kim Jong-un, you know, economically, then maybe we can keep this guy at bay. Which, by the way, has been the practice in the past. But then the question becomes, because he also met, again, Kim Jong-un met with Moon Jae-in again, and you have people in South Korea that are very unhappy with that because they believe this is very dangerous. And if you believe that the economy, improving the economy in North Korea is going to improve things, keep in mind, Kim Jong-un keeps that stuff for himself. That doesn't get to his people. For Omnitrax, here's your forecast.
Upwards of 4 to 10 inches of rain today will fall from the Florida Panhandle over to central Alabama. The rain-plagued south from earlier last week will continue to see these showers from that system move out of the Gulf of Mexico into Tennessee, North and South Carolina, and western Georgia. We'll look for flash flood watches and warnings to persist throughout the week as some of these smaller mountain streams come into larger rivers in the region. So the areas most affected by the rainfall today, I-20 from eastern Mississippi over to Birmingham, Alabama, I-10 Baton Rouge to Tallahassee, Florida, I-40 from Little Rock, Memphis and Knoxville southward from there, and over to I-95 is where we'll see the greatest rainfall. There is a slight potential for some severe weather today in the central and northern plains. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Join Gary and Eric in the Octagon now, 1-866-90-RED-EYE.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome. Good morning. If you wonder why I chuckled when I asked Eric before, I said, so what do you think we're going to see the summit? The reason was when I saw the tweet yesterday afternoon. And right. The tweet says, our United States team has arrived in North Korea to make arrangements for the summit between Kim Jong-un and myself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that tweet appeared out of nowhere.
There was no announcement that they had rescinded the letter, the letter came out last week, and it was like, okay, it's over. There will be no summit.
Right.
That was an official announcement. Then on Twitter, it's like, okay, we're ready to go. Ready to go for what? The summit.
What summit? You should have seen me. I'm trying to find the story. Well, where's the story?
Right.
Where's the story that they've rescinded the letter
an official announcement. Based on further review.
It
would be like, no, you would have, you'd have a guy in a black and white striped shirt, comes out with a whistle. He's got, based on further review, the summit is back on. The kick is good.
No, it would come out as an announcement. The White House is announcing that we're rescinding our letter from Thursday after further talks with them. And so, but it was coming out in the tweet form like that made you look for the reference, you know, to what led up to this, right. and you couldn't find it. That was the thing. That's why I
wouldn't
chuckled
it be
about
funny
it.
Is if it was a tweet like that was that he had not sent like a month ago that he meant to he never hit send.
But I thought that I said to myself, is this a tweet by mistake?
Exactly. I didn't mean to send that one. That one was from a month ago.
So just so you know, one other thing I want to mention here, because a lot of the talk is, you know, the blue wave versus a blue ripple versus calm seas versus the sea going back, I don't know, out, whatever, low tide.
Yeah, right.
But where are we going here? And Eric and I, really, we don't make predictions. But we like to read interesting polls because at times we'll tell you we don't know where the American public is at. We don't know where their head is at. I just found this fascinating. The poll was done in Missouri, the Gravis marketing poll. It was conducted on May 16th and has Republican Senate candidates Austin Peterson and Josh Hawley ahead of Claire McCaskill, who is the incumbent Democrat, by impressive margins. When asked if the general election for Senate were held today and the candidates Republican Josh Hawley and Democrat Claire McCaskill, who would you vote for? Josh gets 50%, Claire McCaskill gets 43%. 7% were undecided. Okay, so you're right at the 50% margin there, and you're still out. When asked, though, if the general election for the Senate were held today and the candidates were Republican Austin Peterson and Democrat Claire McCaskill, because Peterson and Hawley are running, you know, in the primary, who would you vote for? 56% of the respondents chose Peterson, while 40% chose the incumbent Claire McCaskill. That's really pretty fascinating. But the thing that blew me away, and again, maybe this is an outlier poll, I don't know. By age, 18 to 29-year-olds polled in this in Missouri, 70% would vote for the Republican candidate Peterson. Mm-hmm. Claire McCaskill, 29%. 18 to 29-year-olds. Even 30 to 44-year-olds, Peterson would win 61 to 37 over McCaskill. Mm. It gets closer when you get 45 to 54. Peterson 63%, McCaskill. Or actually, it's better for Peterson. 63 to 33 for McCaskill. But as soon as you get above 55, they choose McCaskill over Peterson. Mm-hmm. Apparently, he is somebody, and I haven't seen any of the campaigning up there, but apparently he is relating to young people, where young people, when you talk about millennials, by landslide margins, right at this moment, are choosing the Republican candidate. So as I say, when you see polling like that, that's where we sit at times and say, we're not sure where the American public is going.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's so hard, and I think, and I saw something over the weekend too about polling, and that some of the polls right now, and this would be the general polls. In fact, Washington Examiner had something. 2020, Trump gains on Democrats. Stephen Miller says polls better than in 2016 win. Well, not sure if Stephen Miller is accurate here. Or not, we'd have to look back to see if you know, and by the way, it's only 2018. Let's get through the midterm first. But the point being is that the president's polling numbers are coming up a little bit. They're favoring him more. So what does that mean then when you break it down into the, you know, the districts and the state levels for those Senate races, all those Senate seats that are up for grabs, and, of course, all of the House seats? It becomes very different in those districts. We talk about Pennsylvania 18. PA 18 was won by a conservative Democrat, a gun-wielding, pro-gun, anti-gun-grabbing Democrat, because it's a conservative district. That's not where the party's going. It's not at all where the party is going. So you have to look at kind of the trend. There could be. I mean, I don't know. But there's a number of the House seats, the Republican seats now, that are up for grabs for those that are not, you know, running and won't run again. But does that necessarily mean they won't go Republican? Well, no. Many of those are safe districts. There might be a conservative Democrat who changes the numbers there. But then again, how does that conservative Democrat vote?
Was that the story that said that the Democrats still top two choices for 2020 are Oprah and Michelle Obama?
There was a story that said that.
Yeah, there was this. I don't know if it was the same. For some reason, that story kicked off something in my head that I saw earlier mm-hmm. that we never mentioned. But I saw that headline yesterday. Democrats still, their top two candidates for 2020, Oprah and Michelle Obama.
Right.
Wait. Neither are running.
Well, this is a survey. It's a Zogby Analytics. It was talking about, and it focused on the gap between leading Democrats, including Biden, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie Sanders. It's tightened where, as before, maybe a month or two ago, remember it was out again that Biden could beat Trump easily if the election were held today. Well, the election's not held today. I mean, because when they say if the election were held today, what they're discounting is the power of all the ads, the power of the debates, the power of things that are said during a campaign season, and the things that are promoted.
Well, here's a point. Remember, when Hillary was campaigning, they wanted to keep her out of the public because they believed that every time she campaigned, it did her harm.
Yes.
So is there a case to be said that the reason that the Democrats are, you know, for example, if they're leading today and their poll numbers are good, is because they're not campaigning, and the best thing for Democrats to do is not campaign, and maybe they'll have a chance of winning?
Well, there's the thing. you know, again, it just frustrates me to no end when they, if the election were held today,
I know.
You mean without advertising, without people promoting things, without debates? Well, that's silly. It's nonsense.
I'm going to get to this audio cut from Representative Mark Meadows, chairman of the House Freedom Caucus. He was on with Margaret Brennan on Face the Nation to discuss Spygate. And I thought it was good just after this weekend where the whole thing was about the fact Trump's lying. It's not a spy. It's a confidential human source. It's an informant, but not a spy. Lies. Spy. Lie. Okay. So they discussed Spygate.
We were just talking to Director Clapper about what the president calls Spygate.
Right.
You've had a lot of questions about this. We saw the Justice Department hold this extraordinary briefing with leadership on the Hill showing some classified materials. I know you weren't in those meetings, but tell me if you're satisfied.
Well, to be clear, no documents were shown. And so there was a briefing, but yet there were no documents that were shown. We're hopeful that that will happen in the coming days as long as we can protect the sources and methods that are important to all Americans. And yet at the same time, we continue to see this dragging out of a narrative, you know, where we're not seeing documents, where we're not getting the type of transparency that really members of Congress have requested for 7 or 8 months.
And what do you think the FBI did, and who do you think they
did? What we do know is that there was indeed a confidential human source, is what the FBI would call it, that was actually giving intel, not only to the FBI, but you have to ask the question, when did it start? We do know that actually those confidential human sources were engaging prior to the official FBI investigation. So the question begs, at whose direction, you know, what were they collecting and who were they reporting to? Because that was happening before the FBI actually opened an investigation. And so as we know that, and we know that from non-classified sources, there is no question that there was a spy that was collecting information. And the definition of that, somebody who does something in secret without the knowledge of another person.
But, you know, in legal standards, that's different in terms of how law enforcement works with informants.
Well, but an informant is someone who, if they had information on you and went to the FBI and said, you know, listen, we have this wrongdoing. We're giving you some information where it was not directed or where the initiation of it was not from the informant. We know that actually they initiated the contact between members of the Trump campaign and at whose direction. And at what point do we as Americans say it is not right to spy on a campaign? Whether it's Donald Trump's or Bernie Sanders, it's not right.
Well, the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, Senator Rubio, who was on this show, said they haven't seen evidence to back up the claim.
Well, I'd
that there
be
was
glad. You know, listen, I've got non-classified stuff, Margaret, and if they want to come by my office, mm-hmm. Senator Rubio is a dear friend. He can come by. We've got, you know, text messages that acknowledge the existence of that.
Well, and if you have people around your campaign or in your office who
right.
were being contacted or trying to make contact with foreign powers, would you want that looked into?
Sure, but therein is another problem. If the FBI knew it was going on, why did they not do a defensive briefing? Why did they not go to the nominee and say, by the way, here is a problem. You've got somebody that you've never met, Carter Page, who had never met the president, that is having inappropriate contact with someone. We want to make you aware of it. Why was that never done? And it still to this date has never been done.
And then they went on to immigration. So it was like, okay, can't argue that. Let's move on.
Yeah.
To something else. But yeah, I mean, that's a question. He asked all the questions that we've asked and made all the statements, you know, that really are in question form that we've also asked. You want to get to the bottom of this. And as we have challenged Democrats, we thought that's what you wanted.
Right. If you want the truth, if you believe that some wrongdoing on the part of Trump or his campaign, someone in his campaign has been done, then you want, in fact, you want the media, you want Congress, you want the FBI to show the entire world that there was a basis for that.
Right.
That this investigation started from this event or this series of events. Very clear. Here's where it started. Here's why the FBI was looking into him. Here's where this investigation began. It's not difficult.
And what we get back is we can't tell you. Trust us.
Right.
Sorry. Doesn't cut.
House Intel Committee gets to see it.
Right. As Andrew McCarthy said, doesn't cut it.
Nope.
Because everything you've told us already about the supposed top secret information that would reveal sources and methods did not. You lied to us about that, so sorry, you're not believable anymore.
Right. You have no credibility, and you also have no authority over oversight.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Drivers, you need a tuning solution? What's new from Bully Dog? Justin Burt from Bully Dog has the details.
So we've got a couple of turbos now. We've got a Stage 1 Detroit turbo for some of the guys out there running the Detroit power plants. It is a stock style, but it's non-wastegated. So you're going to build a little more boost, a little more quick in the RPM range. You're going to make that power a little sooner than you will with the stock turbo. We've also got our CAT Stage 1 turbo, which is a 78-millimeter billet unit. And it also comes in a 132 exhaust housing that's been popular for some of our CAT guys, but we've also got this Stage 2 coming. Those should land in the warehouse sometime in the 1st of May and be ready to ship out in the weeks following. So that is also a 78-millimeter billet unit, but it actually has a 145 exhaust housing. So you're going to make a little more power, you're going to make a little less heat, and you're going to use a little bit less boost to make more power. So it's definitely a more efficient unit. We've been working on it for a while. We've listened to some of these guys out here making a little more power than stock, and this is that option for them. So the website, bigrig.bullydog.com. You can check out our Facebook page for applications and announcements for product support, and our Instagram as well.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric. I'm Gary. Remember, get to your Starbucks, this morning because it may be closed this afternoon, depending on whether you're a company store or not for the training. So
you know they're going to have reporters outside some of those company stores that will be reporting on the closed Starbucks, right?
Yep. And they'll have microphones in the barista's face. So what did you learn?
Yeah, what did you learn? Anything? Are you still a racist?
What did you learn about?
Let me ask you, are you still a racist? That's one of those loaded questions.
Yes, that's right.
No. I mean, no, I never was. I mean,
are you a bigger racist than yesterday?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.